Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 401st episode of War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we're your hosts. My name is Mr. 400, Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. 401, Matt Wilson.
We're on that road to 500, baby.
We only have to look forward to increasingly difficult milestones as the years go on.
What if we call the next 2 years of this show Road to 500?
Oh, that would be very funny. Rocket Ajax, Road to 500, Chapter 1.
And then, like, episode 500 is just, like, a regular-ass episode.
Yeah.
We get on the guest we've had on the most. We get on Chris Robertson.
You know, Chris Robertson and Benito. Chris Robertson and Benito. Folks, we have a good one today. We do not have a guest that we've had the most. We have some brand new guests, and that's right, guests. We have an entire creative team swinging by today.
That is true. We have Caitlin Major and Kelly Basto, the writer and artist team behind the new Quirk Books graphic novel, Manfred the Man, which is an absolute hoot. And if you are fans of this show, you will be happy to know has some definite Garfield influence.
Yeah, there's going to be some Garf talk.
You're going to get that Garf talk here on 401. You knew it was happening.
401, time for Garf, baby.
And that's going to be a super fun conversation with them. We're going to talk a lot about very, very funny choices in that book. But Chris, before we get to that, we got a lot of business to take care of, so let's dig right into it and start by thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. These are the people. They have gone on down to 401 Gimmick Street. They're on the road to 500. Gimmick Street actually turns into the road to 500. They give as little as a dollar every month so that we can keep doing this show, keep doing Every Story Ever specials, all the good stuff that we do. Here on War Rocket Ajax.
Here are their names, starting with Gustavo Gama.
Thank you, Gustavo.
The next one is very weird.
Okay.
The name that they have put into Patreon is Chris Sims, Matt D. Wilson.
That's my name. That's your name.
That's the only reason I can think of that they did this.
That's troubling. It's very troubling. I just want to say that.
I admire whatever it is you're trying to do here, person who did this. Next up, we have Josh Fleming.
Thank you, Josh.
Brian Kelly.
Thank you, Brian.
Heiko Barrow.
Thank you, Heiko.
And finally, Ted Melnick.
Thank you, Ted.
If you would like to be like any of those people and put our names in as two individual first and last names on Patreon, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as $1 a month, as Chris said, to get ad-free episodes of the show. I am in the process of getting our brand new t-shirts printed for our upper tier patrons on Patreon who get...
It's a good one this year.
You may have seen the design if you follow me on Twitter. They are the only ones who get that shirt for an entire year. And then we eventually put that shirt up for sale on our t-shirt store. But you'll be the only people who get that shirt for an entire year. So that shirt is coming. There are line stepping privileges for all the games that we play. There's bonus audio, which we're going to be recording a ton of in the week to come. More on that in a minute. There's all kinds of cool stuff over there on Patreon if you go help us out there. So if you have a couple bucks to spare every month, if you would like to help us keep paying the bills, you can do that there on Patreon. All right, Chris, with that done, it's time to make some checks and wrecks.
Let's do it, Matt.
Christopher, what do you have to check in with this week?
Couple things, buddy. First of all, the big one, as you hinted at just a moment ago, this coming weekend, we're actually in the middle of the week. You and me are starting a road trip. We are driving from the Tar Heel State of North Carolina all the way up to the Buckeye State of Ohio. That's right. We're going from the state where Matt was born to the state where I was born. And we're going to be attending the Columbus Podfest, which is a podcast convention. We are going to be doing a show on Friday night in front of a live audience, which we've never done a podcast show before. And we've done more live shows this year already than I think we did through all of last year. So that's fun. But it's going to be a good one. It's going to be very fun. If you are anywhere near Columbus or you feel like making the drive, I highly encourage you to do so. It's not just us. There will be some McElroy content. I know the people love that.
That's going to be on Saturday.
That's going to be on Saturday. We're on Friday night at 10?
We're at 9:45. We have done more preparation for this particular live show than I think we've ever done for any live show.
Yeah, which, because usually the preparation for a live show is a zero preparation.
Yeah. This, we're doing a panel president episode on this one. So we have sort of curated our lists for panel president to make sure that we're discussing characters that an audience that maybe isn't as deeply ingrained into comics as we are, and we know a lot of our listeners are, might be. We wanted to get some of the characters that people might know from movies or from more general popular culture and rank them and make sure that we're not really doing any deep cuts in this one. So we're sort of trying to play to the live audience a little bit, but it should be super fun. We also don't want to do any characters that we have to like look up stuff about.
Yeah.
So we're going to definitely have it down. We know who the characters are, and we're going to rank those on that show. And it should be a fun time. Also, when we're in Ohio, we're going to be doing a signing on Saturday at Comic Town in the afternoon. So if you're in the Columbus area and you're not going to the podcast festival, at least come see us at our signing at Comic Town. We will have all our various books there, and it should be a great time, and we're looking forward to seeing all those people there. I did not think about it, Chris, as being us traveling from the state where I was born to the state where you were born. This is like a weird relationship trip for us.
It really is. I mean, you probably weren't thinking about it because I do not identify as an Ohioan. I identify as a South Carolinian. In my heart, I am Southern by the grace of God. But yeah, it's going to be fun, and we're going to be, obviously, we're not going to be locked in a car together for 20 hours without doing some bonus content. So that's check number one. Check number two, and hey, just keep in mind that we have a Patreon. I bought a new computer this week.
As I understand it, your old computer crumbled in your hands as you were working on an episode of Apocrypals.
In the words of the King James Version, it gave up the ghost. My old MacBook I got back in 2012, and it lasted a good amount of time. 6 years, I think, is about the time you can expect a laptop to last. But last September, the keyboard went out, so I had like a USB keyboard plugged into my laptop, which was not fun or cool. So now I've got that brand crisp new MacBook, that MacBook Pro action. Matt, this thing's got not only does it have a functioning keyboard, which is like priority one for me, it also has that touch bar on it. Mm. Like when I'm in an app, like the function keys don't exist. They're on like a Star Trek screen. There's got to be some way to get like Elcar's, like Star Trek formatting for the touch bar, right?
I would hope so. I would hope that would be – you got to be able to skin that thing, right?
Matt, if I send you a text message from my computer, which I can do. Don't want to brag, but I can do that.
I mean, I can send you text messages from my computer too.
I mean, yeah, look, I said I didn't want to brag. Apparently you fucking did.
No, I'm just saying that that's a capability that a lot of people have.
Okay, cool. So, it's, yeah, why don't you fuck up my special moment a little more? That's fine. But yeah, if I send you a text message, which I can do from this computer, I have emojis on the keyboard now.
And that's pretty rad.
They come up on that touch bar.
Yeah, you could send the guy with sunglasses on, which is the only emoji that matters, right from there.
Matt, can you just check your phone for me real quick in just a second? You start giving me your check, and then I'll tell you when you can check your phone.
Okay. My check, Chris, is that I have a very special announcement. Mm-hmm. Now, I know a lot of people who listen to this show probably backed the Kickstarter for my comic series, Everything Will Be Okay, which launched last year. There are three issues out to Kickstarter backers at this point. Four is coming very soon, within the next few weeks. But for those who did not back it on Kickstarter, the very exciting announcement is that issue one of Everything Will Be Okay is going to be available on Comixology on May 30th. That is not a totally, absolutely 100% solid date, but it is almost certainly the date that it is going to go up on Comixology. I believe pre-orders for it will start a week in advance, and I'm very excited about it. It's great to finally get that comic out to people. I also got some single issues of the first issue printed, and I will have them with me when we're in Ohio and Columbus, and I'll have them at HeroesCon this year. But that is the only single issue that's going to be in print. All the digital issues are going to be up on Comixology at one point or another. So you should go check that out when it is available on May 30th. I'm sure I will bring it up again between now and then. But I wanted to just let folks know that that's going to be happening later this month.
Matt, can you check your phone for me real quick?
Oh, I see it. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, is it live or is it Memorex?
Would you like me to announce what this text message says?
Please do.
Oh, it is a skull. Mm-hmm. And then the emojis for the number is 316.
Uh-huh.
It's like you beeped me my doom.
Yep. That's exactly what it is.
I'm sending you something real quick.
Oh, okay. It's the Matt Wilson emoji.
Yeah, the sunglasses emoji, which is the only one that matters.
Yeah.
Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
I am going to unsurprisingly recommend Avengers: The Infinity War. It's dope. You have not seen it, correct?
I have not seen it at the time that we are recording this. I am going to see it this weekend because I cannot avoid it. I was going to wait until I could go see it with Marlene, but she is so busy that it is just not going to happen. So I'm going to get up at like 8:30 on Saturday and go to a 9 a.m. showing of Infinity War. I can see.
That's the time, dog. You know I hate going to the movie theater. That is when I go to the movie theater.
Yeah.
Is in the morning, first thing in the a.m. Rather than talking about the movie, because you haven't seen it, and I'm sure there's a segment of our listenership that has not seen it yet, I do want to say that I liked it a lot and that I think it is the most comic book movie of all time. It actually feels like a comic book crossover, which is pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than discussing the content, I will say I did not see this movie at my usual theater. I went to the brand new Raleigh, North Carolina Alamo Draft House.
That seems like a good choice. There's an Alamo Draft House rumored to be coming here, and I will be very excited for that when it comes, because maybe I won't have to go see a movie every time at 9 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. And I got to say, I'm surprised Raleigh got one before Asheville, honestly.
It's just a bigger market. That's really all it is.
I mean, yeah, and like a cooler market, like over here, I think. Don't know why you would be, like, mean about it, but okay. The Alamo Draft House was interesting, I think, is the way I want to put it. Because they had the recliner seats, which were dope. They brought you some food over the course of the movie. I got that real popcorn, which was an interesting experience.
Uh-huh.
You can also rent VHS tapes from an Alamo Draft House. Which is, I don't know if that's a thing that's in all of them. I assume it is, but the one in Raleigh has a video store in it, which I found very interesting. Because, Matt, we've talked about it before. I do not miss the days of VHS tapes in a practical sense. I miss them in an aesthetic sense.
Sure.
And so getting to look through VHS tapes while I was leaving the movie was a very fun way to like kind of wrap up a movie. And I think you can like rent them for free. I think you need to obviously like put a card on file and everything, but it was pretty cool. And I, one thing that happened was that our movie was delayed. There was about 15 minute delay in the movie because there was a problem with the file they had and they had to like re-upload the digital version. And so with the movie being delayed for like 10 or 15 minutes, everybody in the theater got free passes for next time. So I'm at least going to go back once and I'm really looking forward to the experience. I think it'll be fun.
That is pretty good.
Yeah. Infinity War, pretty good. What is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is something I just want us to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Because I think we've both seen it now. It's the Andre the Giant documentary on HBO.
Yes.
Which I think is about 70% of a good documentary about Andre the Giant. And is about 30% Hulk Hogan content that I could have totally done without.
I've seen you say that. I've seen a lot of people say that. I don't necessarily disagree, but I also feel like this documentary was co-produced with WWE.
Yeah.
For WWE, WrestleMania 3 is the most important thing that has ever happened.
That is true.
I do think it's arguable that it is legitimately the most important moment of Andre the Giant's career. It was a huge deal. And I feel like if you're going to talk about Andre, the number of people who are around that you can really talk to about him are like, it's Vince, it's Tim White, and it's Hulk Hogan. I do genuinely think that. So I see why they did it.
Yeah, it would be good if Bobby Heenan was still alive. Because
it would be great if Bobby Heenan was still alive for a lot of reasons.
For many, many reasons. Well, in the last years of his life, he couldn't really talk either. But if he could have been interviewed for that documentary, it would have been another voice that was there that would have been, you know, important and worth having. I totally get that, you know, they had to tell the story with the tools that they had. And Hulk Hogan was the other half of that match. I get it. But so much of the rest of the movie was so much more interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Everything around WrestleMania 3. Because part of it is we've heard that WrestleMania 3 story so many times, you know?
Yes.
As fans. There's a part of it that felt like the movie was not necessarily for wrestling fans, which I get. It's on HBO. It's a mainstream thing.
Yeah, I think that's very fair.
But I was fascinated by the footage of young Andre when he's slimmer.
Talking about young, thin, 7 foot tall Andre?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he's slimmer and he doesn't have like the rasp in his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a big athletic guy, right? I wanted to see more of that. And there's a lot of like weirdly tiptoeing around Andre in his later life and Andre as he was leaving the WWF.
Mm-hmm.
That I was really interested in finding out more about. Like, I understand that since it was a WWF co-production, like, we were never going to hear about him on the bus with Bad News Brown.
Yeah.
Which, if you don't know that story, you can go look it up. I would have loved to have seen more of earlier in life Andre and later in life Andre. There's only so much you can do in an hour and a half or however long the documentary was. And I think it did a good job for what it was, and it's worth watching. But there's a big part of me that just like left that documentary being like, but what about this? Tell me more about that. You know,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess that's the difference between a documentary and a biography that you sit down and read.
Yeah. A couple things. It was actually really nice to see Ric Flair showing up in that documentary, saying like amazing things.
Yes. His interview is buck wild.
since Andre is so strongly identified with the WWF and Rick is so strongly identified with WCW, you don't think about them being contemporaries, but like obviously they were. Like obviously they knew each other.
Well, they wrestled in Japan together for one thing, and you know, Andre went around in the territory days, just like Rick did.
Yeah.
If anything, Andre and Rick were the closest to each other in terms of what they did than anybody.
Yeah.
Because they were the touring attraction. Rick was the champion. Andre was the giant spectacle that everybody wanted to see.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, can we talk about that time that Vince McMahon says that he just erases any memories that cause him pain?
Okay. If you haven't seen the documentary, there's a part near the end where Vince McMahon is asked if he remembers the last time he saw Andre, because Andre had some anger toward Vince at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince McMahon's response to that is to say, no, he doesn't remember, because he essentially erases any bad memories from his brain.
He says very casually, I have a facility for getting rid of memories that cause me pain. Anything that causes me pain.
Now, you had a theory about that where you had a belief that he was really doing this.
Oh, yeah. My theory is that is sociopath behavior, and I fully believe it.
My counterpoint to that is that it is absolutely not true. It's just Vince McMahon talking tough guy talk as a way to say, I'm not going to talk about something that was hurtful to me. And my way of not talking about it is to say that I erased it from my memory.
I do not think you are wrong. I also do not think I am wrong.
It's probably somewhere between those two.
It's a little bit of both.
But for moments like that, that is a big part of why it is worth watching.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you get weird moments like that from Vince. You get to see young Andre. You get to hear Tim White, who I didn't even realize was Andre's handler for so long, talked very emotionally and openly about his relationship with Andre.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any interest whatsoever, wrestling fan or not, in Andre the Giant, if you're just a fan of Andre the Giant from The Princess Bride.
If you want to see our good, close, personal friend, Cary Elwes.
Talk about how much pain Andre was in.
Yeah.
You can do that.
God, like I didn't want to ask Cary Elwes all the questions that he always gets asked, but now I'm really regretting not talking to him about Andre, you know?
Yeah. That's the one thing I was like, I should ask him about Andre.
Yeah. Very good documentary.
Well, Chris, I think that's gonna cover it for our checks and recs. So let's talk about some of the comics of the week. All right, Chris, do you want to start with an ending or do you want to start with a beginning?
Let's start with the beginning and end with an ending, Matt.
Then let's start with the first issue of the new Avengers series. This is by Jason Aaron and Ed McGuinness. It is jumping off of what took place in Avengers No Surrender. But it is clearly like after a time jump where the Avengers have been disbanded for a while. It's Thor, Cap, and Iron Man getting back together and kind of deciding, all right, what are we going to do to get back together? There's a few different interesting things happening in here. One is, this feels very much like the movie versions of these characters.
Oh, yeah. Are you talking about the Avengers team that is Captain America, short hair Thor, Iron Man, Black Panther, Captain Marvel, and Doctor Strange?
Iron Man who wants to quit.
Yeah.
Or who doesn't really see his place in being a superhero anymore.
Yeah.
Which is very movie Iron Man.
Yeah, it is very much like, here's all your favorites from the movies, which, like, is a thing that I do not begrudge Marvel for doing at all. Like, I think...
No, not at all. I think it's smart.
Yeah, that was one of the big problems with the Secret Empire story. Regardless of opinions of how it was handled or how it went down, I think part of the initial huge reaction was that the first part of that story came out like right after Civil War came out, and everybody wanted like our Captain America, and that was not it.
They wanted good guy movie Cap,
yeah,
who has made such an impact on broad popular culture. Like, who knew that Captain America would have such a cultural impact now.
Yeah.
Right. But he has, and it's because of the movies. And so people not seeing what's in the movies, they want to see what's in the movies. And so
you're right, Matt, people not seeing is the problem with that particular story.
Didn't even realize I did that. I'm sorry, everybody.
But yeah, like I think there's nothing wrong with like putting those characters who, you know, I like all those characters. I think that's a dope team. Carol Danvers like picks up Arishem the Judge.
Okay.
This, which is pretty dope.
That's the other part I want to talk about. The one non-movie character that's in this is She-Hulk, and she's a welcome addition anywhere. But the high concept of this being Celestials just falling out of the fucking sky.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like big, big Jason Aaron stuff that I am here for.
I'll tell you what I like. And that's that we are living in – we're living in the Jason Aaron era of Marvel right now. Like, he is clearly the guy now at Marvel, which, A, he should be. He's fucking fantastic. You will never catch us saying a bad word about big Jason Aaron, especially after he did an interview on this show during a gas leak that one time.
That's true.
I had a weird experience reading this where I thought for a second – I was reading Avengers number one, and I thought for a second, hey, is there going to be a character that me and Chad created showing up in this? but I don't think anybody knows about Zodus the Forgotten anymore. I think three people knew about it, and then our book got canceled. So
you never know. You never know what might happen.
Zodus the Forgotten, he's the – if you see a if you see a Celestial show up in that book and he's got Wolverine claws and a sword, that's Zodus the Forgotten. So keep an eye out.
I do want to say, though, even with all of the movie nods in this first issue, there's a considerable amount of Marvel Comics shit in here, too.
Oh, there's quite a bit, and you know I'm into it.
Like, not only do you have Celestials everywhere, you also have, like... Even though this is movie Thor, movie Cap, movie Iron Man, they're acknowledging their comic history. You know, Thor's talking about how he's not worthy. He's Thor the Unworthy now.
He doesn't have Mjolnir.
Yeah, Hydra Cap is brought up in passing. And there's also a whole part at the beginning that goes back to Marvel Legacy number one. Where you've got the like prehistoric Avengers leading up to the Doctor Strange Black Panther stuff that happens in this issue,
mm-hmm.
which is super cool.
Yeah, man. The prehistoric Avengers are we should probably mention that. The first page of Avengers number one takes place, quote, 1 million years ago. That's that Marvel comic shit I like.
And also Robbie Reyes is in here for a couple pages.
Yep.
So we're going to have that Ghost Rider shit, too.
Oh, I love it. Like, I will say this. This did maybe the best thing an Avengers number one can do, which is it didn't just make me want to read Avengers number two, you know, which I absolutely did. It made me want to read all the Marvel stuff that I've fallen behind on.
Yeah.
It made me want to be like, oh, okay, so is this like King of the Dead stuff that T'Challa's doing? Okay, cool. Hey, where'd Thor get his new hammer? Like, oh, is Tony back out of his coma? Hey, I should probably catch up on that Mark Waid, Chris Samney, Captain America. It made me want to read all that stuff today.
And while we're on the topic of stories that make us want to read some superhero universe shit, let's talk about DC Nation number zero, which introduces us to new-ish directions for Batman, even though the Batman story is by the current Batman writer, the ongoing Batman writer. A Superman story by Brian Michael Bendis. And Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, which, yes.
Yeah. God, it looks good.
And then there's a Justice League story at the end that's from the new Scott Snyder. That's leading up to the new Scott Snyder run on Justice League.
Mm-hmm. The Justice League spinning out of the events of Metal.
I gotta say, I liked all three of these stories.
Yeah, same. You will recall, I was pretty down on the first Bendis story in Action Comics 1000. But this one, I think, was so much better. Like, so, like, felt so much more. It felt like a Superman comic and not a Brian Bendis comic, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agreed wholeheartedly. And a big part of that for me is that it is a Daily Planet story.
Yes.
I wasn't crazy about Bendis doing a, hey, let's do a story about who destroyed Krypton thing. But I'm all in for him doing a Daily Planet story. I really enjoyed, like, his version of Perry White.
Yeah, his version of Perry White was good. Like, his Clark was good, which I was, you know, not to be rude, genuinely surprised by. But I think, like, in retrospect, that is kind of where Bendis' strength has always been, right? Is in the Clark Kents and not necessarily the Supermans.
Yeah, it's in the day-to-day stuff, the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
So I think he, like, and obviously working with Jose Luis Garcia Lopez is going to elevate literally anyone into some good, good stuff. It's amazing that he's still this good.
He should be drawing a Superman book right fucking now.
Yeah, there's no reason, like, I know it's going to be Jim Lee, right, is going to be drawing the Superman book?
Well, the Man of Steel is a different artist every issue.
Okay, right.
So
it should just be Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. You know, the arguably the best DC artist, like the best DC Comics artist of all time. Just, you know, just a thought. Just a thought. Give that guy a book.
Yeah, I liked this story so much more than the Action Comics story. The Joker story, the Tom King Clayman Joker story, that ties into the Batman Catwoman wedding thing, really hit me in exactly the right way. I tweeted that it was extremely my shit.
Can I guess why?
Please tell me why.
Joker tells jokes?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have occasional problems with Tom King's run on Batman, but here's one thing that I really genuinely appreciate and like. Joker tells jokes and Riddler says riddles. They actually do it. They actually do the thing they're supposed to do. Joker tells jokes. That's what I want.
That's what I want.
It's in his name. Like, it should not be that difficult.
I was so pleased by the version of the Joker that is in this comic book. In some ways, it reminded me of Batman the Animated Series. Mm-hmm. Like, I could not get out of my head the episode Joker's Favor.
Yeah. No, it had very much that feel.
Because this is Joker making a guy's life a living hell over something stupid.
Yes.
Like, he just shows up at his house awaiting an invitation to Batman's wedding.
Yeah. He's scary and also genuinely funny, telling these, like, you know, very basic jokes. That...
Okay, I gotta just describe one of them.
I know what my favorite was. What was your favorite?
Tell me your favorite first.
I never learned the whole alphabet. I don't know why.
Okay, that one is good.
Very good.
My favorite one is, did you hear the one about the letter that didn't have a stamp? Roger says no. Joker says, eh, you wouldn't get it. And then he mugs directly at us, the reader. So good.
It's very good. Like, this, and through it all, like, he's fucking scary in it, you know?
Because he's so flippant about all of it. While he's pointing a gun in this guy's face, and this guy's sure that he's going to kill him. And then he does.
Yeah. I mean, he's the Joker.
Yeah.
He's never not scary, but he's also never not funny. And that's a difficult balance to walk. But it's the thing that I think King does with Joker and Riddler specifically that he does better than anything else he does in those books. And I very much appreciate it.
Yeah. And to talk about the Justice League story quickly, it is not just by Scott Snyder. It's by Scott Snyder, James Tynion IV, and Josh Williamson, which I don't know if they're going to be teaming up on that. Is that going to be a weekly book?
Well, and there's going to be three.
There's three different teams.
There's three different teams. So I think Williamson's doing Justice League Dark, and I think Tynion's doing the cosmic one, Justice League Odyssey, maybe?
Oh, actually, there's four different teams. There's Team Entropy, which is led by Batman. There's Team Mystery, which is led by Superman. There's Team Wonder, which is led by Wonder Woman. And there's Team Wisdom, that's led by Cyborg.
Yeah.
And Flash.
And then, but then there's also like three books.
There's a lot going on in this book.
There is a lot going on.
Also, there are characters that show up at the end of this that are basically Eternals.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because you know I love that Eternal shit.
So wild that both Justice League and Avengers right now are doing that Eternal shit.
More of it, please.
Also, the Justice League story is gorgeous. Jorge Jimenez knocks that art way out of the park. One last comment we're going to talk about real quick is the final issue of the Rogan Gambit miniseries, written by current War Rocket Ajax Intercontinental Champion Kelly Thompson.
This series has been so good. And, like, good in the way that it's, like, if you follow Kelly on Tumblr, which you should, she's a delight. She's gotten a ton of people just saying, hey, thanks. I really like Rogan Gambit, and they haven't been what I've wanted them to be for a while, and this is exactly what I've wanted them to be. And I think you run a risk when you give readers exactly what they think they want, because a lot of times readers don't necessarily know what they want. Now, critics always know what they want, just so you know. I think readers like to be surprised more than they think, and they like things that deviate from their expectations more than they think. But when you're someone like Kelly Thompson, who's that good, and you can bring that skill to Rogan Gambit, you can do the story that everybody wants to see in a way that is actually going to make everybody happy. And I think the way that she did this story was super clever, the way that she set it up to allow herself I should say it's her and Perry Perez, who's
Perry Perez doing the art on this.
But I think Kelly and Perry Perez set it up to allow themselves to explore the history of these two characters and get them back to a position that I think maybe they never should have been out of, but in a way that acknowledges that they have been out of it and that works with what has happened before. It's really clever and really well done. And if you have not read these five issues, absolutely worth it. Makes me excited about X-Men stuff, you know?
Yeah. Three comics this week that we not only recommend, but that have got us excited about stuff to come. So our other comics that we have missed.
Cause Kelly, is now Marvel exclusive. So she's going to have a lot of stuff coming in the future and could not be more excited about that.
All right, Chris, that's going to wrap us up here on our comic book segment, which means that we have the great delight of talking to Caitlin Major and Kelly Basto about Manfred the Man.
Joining us for the podcast today, we are very excited to talk to a pair of creators who have a brand new book out that has a premise that I feel like everyone is going to really enjoy. We have Caitlin Major and Kelly Basto here to talk about Manfred the Man. Caitlin and Kelly, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had a whole creative team on, so this is pretty exciting.
Just a two-woman creative team.
The style of Manfred the Man is so unique in so many ways. The one thing I noticed in the intro to the book was that it was initially pitched as an animated series, and I feel like that really shows in the book. It sort of has that feeling or that DNA to it.
I mean, I work at an animation studio, so I guess some of that has bled into the comic, maybe.
For our listeners who might not be familiar with it yet, and I'm going to stress yet on that because I think people are going to want to check this one out. Can you describe the premise of this book?
So the premise is that there's a little man whose name is Manfred, and he is the pet to a giant cat whose name is Steve. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, and he kind of acts like a cat, even though he's a man, and Steve kind of acts like a man, even though he's a cat.
Okay. Before we get into some of the deeper dive stuff in the book, there are some choices that the two of you made. In creating,
okay, I don't want Kelly to get implicated in this. I very much insisted that he was naked.
Okay, that is one of the choices I was definitely going to ask about.
My hands were tied.
I want to just like name a few of the choices and see if there's a story behind them, because some of them are so subtle, like not even like just as you're reading the book, you just kind of notice them and you go. Like you have that like quick laugh reaction. I'm sure as soon as you think of, okay, we're going to have a world of humanoid cats and cat like men, you decide, okay, we got to set some ground rules and we got to have certain rules for what is going on. So I'm just going to name a few things. You tell me if there's a story behind it or not.
Sure.
The city being called Catlanta.
I mean, there's not really a story behind this other than our editor, Rick, would, like, ask me questions every now and then to which I did not have an answer. And one of the questions was, what's the name of the town that they live in? And I was like, oh, my God, I got to think of something real quick. It's Catlanta.
I'm glad that was just, like, an instantaneous answer that occurred. So this one, I wanted to be more of a quick hit, but I feel like I need to explain it for the listener. The food that the man pets eat is human food. It's it's these cans of food that are like burgers and chicken wings and stuff like that. And French fries. They eat a lot of French fries too. But it also seems like cats also eat human food. Like there's a whole discussion of them having cupcakes and cookies and stuff. So what was the basis on that idea?
There was really no logic behind it. I don't know. I just thought it would be funny if the men ate, like, canned food, like how cats eat food out of a can, but it was, like, something that a man would obviously want to eat, like a hamburger or tacos or something.
I will say, I want to tell you, just so you don't... I'm not trying to embarrass you or make you feel weird. I just thought it was funny is a perfectly valid answer.
I mean, like, that is going to be the answer for, like, 90% of the questions about this book. Because, like, so much of my goal in writing the book was just, like, to make myself laugh before anyone else. I'm like, if I'm not having fun making this book, then nobody's going to have fun reading it.
All right, this is the last one. And it... You can touch on why, you know, the men had to be naked if you want. But the bigger question for me is, what was behind the decision of making all the pets male?
Okay, so this one actually does have a little bit of a story behind it.
Okay.
So initially, there like most things in the book, there wasn't really any logic behind it. I just didn't want to, like... have to deal with the internet and all of everything that comes with drawing naked women on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to get trolled, basically. And, like everyone can agree that dicks are funny, but, like, there's something about when you draw naked women that it instantly becomes sexual. Like female nudity can't be anything but sexual. And like, I didn't really like process this in my own head. I just was like, well, dicks are funny. And I didn't really think about it like beyond anything like that. And then one of my friends, her name is Lex, she like put it into words that I didn't quite have at the time, where she basically said like, yeah, like female nudity is sexual. And that's just like part of our culture and it's always going to be sexual. So like, you can't really make a joke out of it unless that joke is, haha, here's a sexy naked lady. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that might be part of the answer. But
and I get so many people asking me all the time, like, when I'm going to include women in the comic. It's like, the answer is never. You can stop asking that question. There are never women in the comic.
There are female cats.
There's female cats, yeah. But, like, there's never going to be naked women. I'm never going to, like, make Kelly draw a vagina.
Okay.
Well, I wish we could. We usually take the titles of the episodes from the interview segments. I really wish that could be the title of the episode.
I'm never going to make Kelly draw a vagina.
Very good.
That could be the secret title of this episode. Kelly, I want to pull you in for 1 second while we're on the topic of clothing or not clothing, because it seems like for cats in this world, there's a choice of whether they what clothes they can or can't wear or choose not to wear or wear, and when and how. Was that sort of up to you to decide when to clothe the cats, or was that another? Was that Caitlin also saying, like, okay, in this scene, Steve's wearing a shirt?
Well, Caitlin gave me a lot of freedom to decide, but she did kind of say if Steve's at work, he should have his little work shirt on, and that was basically it. So sometimes I put a little accessory on him, but mostly he's just walking around with nothing on because I guess he's covered in fur. So
yeah.
But nobody wears pants.
Yeah.
Classic cartoon clothing style.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody noticed, but like in the background of one of the panels, there's like a store and they like have a sale on pants.
So pants exist, but they are optional.
Yeah. And like in the background in like Steve's bedroom, there's like a pair of pants like over, like hung over like back of a chair. But yeah, they were just like little in jokes because I was like, you can't draw a cat wearing pants. That's just weird.
There are so many just incredibly funny choices in not just in the premise of the book, but in how the book plays out. Like, I mean, getting back to the subject of the dicks, the cover of the book, obviously, is staged. Manfred is holding a newspaper for part of it while he's walking across a computer keyboard. And then the title page, he's covered up, but then you have like a dramatis personae, and it's right there before the story starts, so that you know, so you can be like, oh, okay, page zero, here it is.
Yeah, it's not going to be too jarring.
The other thing that I think we in particular need to talk about, here's something you might not know about me and Matt. Last summer, we went to a Garfield convention.
I was wondering which one of us would bring it up.
Garfield has a weirdly prominent place in the 10-year history of this podcast. And I think we really have to get into the fact that Manfred's like a human Garfield.
Yeah, well, like, actually, like, his name, Manfred, my partner Matt actually, like, named him. He was like, you should call him something like Garfield, but not quite Garfield. What about, like, Manfred? And I was like, yes.
Well, I gotta tell you, like, your book took me on a journey. Of, at first saying, like, okay, this is a wink, because Manfred is kind of orange.
Yes, that was also a deliberate Garfield related choice.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, that's a little bit of a wink and a nod, but I don't know how intentional it is. And then he falls asleep in a lasagna pan, and I go, wait a minute.
The thing is that, like, I had never actually really read many Garfield comics. Like, I read them when they were in, like, the Sunday newspaper, but I'd never actually, like, got any of the longer form comics. And so when I started writing the book, I went to, like, a used bookstore and I got a couple of, like, those sort of long form Garfield comics. And I was reading them. I was like, these comics are so weird. They're really, really weird. And I don't know. I was like, what is the tone of this comic? Is it meant to be funny? Because it's not. Like, it's just, all of the jokes fell flat, and I don't know who it's for. Anyway, I didn't want to make Garfield.
Garfield has this weird universality to him that, like, when you see Manfred and he's orange, and then he gets in the little box, you're like, right, okay, I know exactly where this is. Especially when Steve is like, I'm a huge loser.
Yeah, he may have been a little bit reminiscent of John.
Well, he is a bit reminiscent of John. To me, the big difference between Steve and John is that John is just there to be the butt of the joke.
Right.
And I'm rooting for Steve. Like, I'm rooting for Steve through this whole thing as bad thing after bad thing happens to him.
I guess maybe that's why I didn't find the Garfield comics very funny, because I just didn't get that John was supposed to be the joke. I think I just thought it was a little bit sad.
Yeah. It can be mean-spirited toward John, for sure. Manfred the Man is not mean-spirited toward Steve at all. I felt like really compelled to keep reading because I wanted Steve to get to a good place. Like I could not stop reading the book and leave Steve in this like horrible position as all these different bad things are happening to him throughout the book.
Yeah, he's a lot more relatable than John, I believe.
Yeah, I'm glad that came across as well. That he seems sympathetic.
So, Kelly, when you were drawing it, did you go to Garfield?
No, not at all.
Really? That's. I mean, I'm excited, but that's surprising.
Yeah. I was trying to get it done.
The other thing that I noticed and I thought was like just note perfect is that the men just say hey. And that got me. That was the one that got me.
It's like a meow.
Is that more of a commentary on people, specifically men, who maybe, you know, try to get across an idea or a feeling with hey? Or is that what you interpret meow to mean? Or is it like something like kind of both?
I guess it's a little bit of both. And actually, I was like looking at one of the old comics that was on Tumblr, and Manfred actually says hey you at one point. So he does actually have more of a vocabulary. He has two words instead of one.
This is scandalous, Caitlin. We got to delete this.
Delete the comic off the internet.
Yeah, this is.
It's like those couple issues of Batman where he carries a gun, and everybody's like, "He carried a gun one time."
And like when we were initially like brainstorming Manfred, he didn't just say "Hey," he would kind of like mumble and like say other things as well, but it all just got distilled down into "Hey," and I think that it kind of just gets the point across. It's just an annoying thing that he vocalizes.
Yeah, can we come up with an explanation for hey you? Like, it's one of those things where people, like, you meet people and they're like, hey, my cat can talk. My cat says hello.
Oh, have you ever seen the video of that like, barking cat?
Yes, I have seen that.
Maybe it's like that.
Like, you hear people say, like, oh, my cat can say hello, and then instead they just go, row, row, and you're like, okay.
It's more like a Scooby-Doo kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe it's like that. So one thing from the introduction that I wanted to ask about, because Caitlin, in the introduction you wrote, you said something to the effect of you didn't have time to draw the comics yourself, which you're an artist in your own right. So how much of the art part of this was collaborative? Was it all your design, Kelly, or did you kind of collaborate on the design and the look and the feel of the book?
Most of the time it was me sketching out an idea that Caitlin had given me. Sometimes she'd send me a thumbnail just to make it easier on me. But our main priority was just kind of getting them on the internet right away after the animation fiasco.
Yeah. A couple of the original Tumblr comics, like, I actually like drew thumbnails. Like I drew thumbnails for them and then just gave those to Kelly. But yeah, I think in the end it ended up just being easier for both of us for me to just like write it down and for Kelly to then like sketch it out.
Yeah, for sure.
And like with the book, we kind of have like a back and forth process with the thumbnails where like I'll give Kelly the script and then she'll sketch out the thumbnails and then she'll send them back to me, and I'll usually like go in and clean them up a little, or like add draw in like backgrounds and stuff like that, or like change the framing if it doesn't quite match like what I had intended in the script, because like I don't tend to include a ton of detail in the script, like, because I don't want to like I don't want Kelly to get overwhelmed with like too much stuff in this, like too many words in the script, basically. So I try and keep it down to like one or two sentences. But sometimes it could just mean that like my intention didn't quite get across.
Yeah. If I may act as the audience surrogate for one moment, Kelly, you mentioned an animation fiasco. I know a little bit about it from the introduction, but I have a feeling that someone listening might wonder what that fiasco was all about. If you can give a little bit of that to us.
Oh, it's not that much of a fiasco. Basically, Caitlin wanted to shop it around to cartoon companies to see if they wanted to do something with it. And she ended up getting the worst, shittiest contract ever from this rando animation company. And then after lawyering up smartly, she kind of declined. But then we got kind of paranoid that the animation company was just going to steal her idea. So she was like, we got to get this on the internet right away. Like, just so nobody else can claim it type of thing.
Yeah, I wanted to get, like, an internet timestamp on it, so I could be like, look, I made this first Tumblr post, like, on this date, so, you know, like, if 2 years down the line it, like, popped up and was, like, being produced by some animation company, then I could be like, hey, you stole my idea.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like the 21st century version of mailing something to yourself, like, ensuring yeah. that you have the copyright, get it on the internet as quick as possible.
Yeah.
In doing that, did you feel like more pressure to just get through it and just get it posted than the storytelling? Because it really works well regardless. But I'm curious about that process and how stressful that must have been.
It wasn't that these were just the initial Tumblr comics. I think we only did like 8 to begin with.
Yeah.
And it was literally just like I had written out like 8 little sort of mini scripts. That were just like gags, and I was like, this will be enough to just like put it on the internet and then it's there and it's got its timestamp on it. Like we had set out to make a graphic novel from the beginning. It was just like, oh, we'll make a couple of like gag strips.
Yeah.
If we can dig into the story of this a little bit, like I talked about, you know, rooting for Steve and how sympathetic of a character he is in this. And a big part of it is one life catastrophe after another happening to him in this comic. And I wonder if you ever had like, you know, a pang of regret about what you were doing to Steve in the comic and like the embarrassments that he was enduring, like at his job where everybody hates him, or with, you know, embarrassing himself in front of his neighbor. Or, you know, eventually, you know, having to go on this big hunt for Manfred, who escapes the house at one point. Like, did you ever feel like maybe this is too much to do to Steve?
No, never. Never. Like, I honestly think that like he's the kind of guy that like he just needs like a huge kick in the pants to like get his life in order. So like he needed to experience all of these life hurdles so that he could like learn about himself. And like it, like the original like plot for this book, it had been like a kind of like rom-com, so he actually ended up getting together with Chelsea at the end, but I wasn't like super comfortable with that. I really wanted I really didn't want his reward at the end to be like a girlfriend, because I was like, no, he should be doing this for himself. Like, he should be doing it to make himself a better person or a better cat.
And for listeners who don't know, Chelsea is his neighbor.
Yeah.
Who continually tells him, hey, you got to get your shit together.
And it's interesting because actually in the follow-up book, which we're writing right now, we actually go into a lot, we kind of delve into like Chelsea's character a little bit more. So she ends up kind of, being a sympathetic character, I think, in the follow-up book.
We were talking about John in Garfield. And one thing about that is that, you know, Garfield always exists in this like perpetual status quo state, right? Where John is always sad. He never grows or changes. and Garfield is always Garfield. This book has, to me, you know, I was kind of expecting like a funny gag book, but instead what it is a book where not only you're sort of, you know, the character that you feel sympathy for through the whole thing, Steve, but also Manfred, both grow and change. Like they they come out on the other side of, you know, a tough time.
Well, that's just like satisfying storytelling, right? Like, yeah, I'm not writing like a sitcom where like everything resets back to zero at the end. Like, it had to have an ending, and people had to like change and learn. Otherwise, like, what was the point of going through any of it?
But I wonder how that affected, you know, writing the second book, because at the end of this, there's a book promised next year, because you can't do the same thing again. Because we have to continue, you know, the journey of these two characters who have gone from being the softest boys you could imagine to being a little tougher by the end of this.
Yeah. Actually, there's a few bits, because I'm almost finished writing the script for the next book, and there's a few bits where, like, I mean, it's like Steve still isn't perfect, you know, like it's not like he solved all of life's problems, but like in the second book there are like new problems that emerge because of his like new relationships and like his new responsibilities, so he has to deal with that. And also, like, this next book goes into like some of the other characters. Like I said, like Chelsea gets her own little like subplot in the second book, so we learn a little bit more about her. Yeah, I'm just developing the whole universe now.
and that's cool. I'm excited for it, because I got to tell you, I do have some questions.
Well, hopefully they get answered in the second book, but please let me know so I can like make sure that I'm heading them up at the pass.
Look, I am pretty sure you're not answering them in the second book, because these are like my weird questions. For example, there's a part where there's a bird outside of a window, and my immediate thought when I saw that was, what is up with birds in this world?
Like, there's also a raccoon in one of the panels.
Yeah. Like, are the humanoid cats, like, if they see a bird, do they flip out?
Oh, yeah. And what about, where are the dogs?
That's another question.
That's my question. I want to know where the dogs are. Is there a dark history to this world?
There's one bit where, like, Steve is in the grocery store, and he's, like, kind of trying to hit it off with the lady. He's like, hey, you know, like, if you're looking for, like a good brand of man food, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, I'm actually more of a dog person.
So the cats own dogs?
I don't know. Maybe.
I think Caitlin was just trolling the audience.
Yeah, I really don't answer any of these questions in the next book. They remain equally as vague.
and that is right and true. Here's another one I had, though. There's a part where Manfred comes across some tough customers in an alley. Some alley men, you might call them. And one of them has an anchor tattoo on his butt. And boy, I got a lot of questions about that.
And I can guarantee you that I do not have any satisfactory answers. maybe he had... Okay, this is going to get dark. Maybe right, he had, sure, like, an abusive cat owner who, like, tattooed him. And
yeah,
that's why
just
he ran away
that.
And joined the man gang. I'm going to go with that. Yep,
I was going to suggest some kind of, like tagging technique where
could
like
be.
Maybe he got caught by man control,
could be,
and they're like they tagged him or something, but I think either one is equally plausible.
You can't give cats tattoos in our world?
Absolutely not. Oh my god, why would you do that?
Look, I'm allergic, I'm not a cat owner.
I
believe that falls under the premise of animal cruelty.
I would say you could try, but it's probably not going to happen.
Okay, fair. That's fair. And with that, I think it might be time for us to head over to Twitter questions and see if our audience has anything for you. Matt, if our listeners want to get in on these conversations that we have with our friends each and every week here on More Rocket Ajax, How exactly can they go about that?
Well, Chris, it is so, so simple.
I'm glad to hear it.
The easiest thing you could imagine. All you have to do is get shrunk down to, I don't know, maybe like a foot tall.
Okay, I'm there already. I'm with you.
16 inches tall. Not wear any clothes, because, you know, any regular clothes would be too big for you anyway.
Right.
You could maybe wear baby clothes, but good luck. And then find...
What, can I wear a little bow tie?
You can wear a little bow tie.
Okay.
Then get a giant cat to care for you and keep you in their home and feed you. And then once you've got that sweet, sweet life situation, sign up for an account on twitter.com. If your little fingers can type it and follow the ISB, that's Chris, the Matt D. Wilson, that's me. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. That's 6:30 Pacific time. And one of us will put out the call for questions for our guests, and you can ask a question from your little man nook, just like the ones you're about to hear for Caitlin and Kelly. And we're going to start with a question from Mike_Donacci on Twitter, who asks, what is the worst thing a pet ever did to you?
The tragic tale of Bruce, which Caitlin is familiar with. Bruce. No,
Bruce.
Bruce is like Bruce is a like fat cat. Who lived with us for a couple of years, and he used to bite me pretty bad if I ever went to go touch him. So it's not that exciting, but there you go.
I mean, that's pretty brutal.
Poor Bruce. Every time I hear about him, I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I've got one. When I lived back in Australia, I had two cats, Roger and Henrietta. And there was one day where it was like a weekend, so I was home, and this huge rainstorm like came out of nowhere, and it was like torrential rain, like the streets started flooding, and the cats were outside, and so I like ran outside and I was like shouting for Roger, like, Roger, where are you? Come back, boy. Like, and I was like in my head, I was like imagining him like getting washed down a storm drain or something like that. Like, I was so worried. And then the rainstorm passed in like 10 minutes because it was Australia and it's ridiculous. And I'd been outside in it and I was completely soaked. And so I like trudge back into the house and I'm like toweling myself off, and Roger just appears out of nowhere. He's completely dry and he's just like, hey, what's up? And I was like, where were you? Oh my God. So yeah, that was the worst thing that he ever did to me.
Oh boy.
Just the emotional strain.
It's just like making me go out into that rainstorm and like look for him. What an idiot.
While we're talking about Roger and your other cat in Australia, Henrietta, you mentioned in the introduction to Manfred that you had to leave them back in Australia.
I did, yeah.
Do you check up on them? Do you hear from them now?
the friend who I left Henrietta with, he quite regularly posts pictures of her to Instagram.
Okay.
So I know that she's good. The guy who I left Roger with, however, like, I didn't really know him very well, and like maybe once a year he'll send me like a little update on Roger, and it's usually just like a picture of him sleeping. So I'm like, cool, okay, he's good.
He still sleeps. all right, here's a question from this is from our pal Luke Hare. And I guess we'll categorize this as a question about the man food in the book, because his question is rather random. He says, what are some good toppings to put on a grilled chicken sandwich? That could be a grilled chicken sandwich that comes out of a can and is fed to a pet man.
Grilled chicken sandwich. I'm thinking like a spicy mayo.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's good. Oh, some avocado.
Avocado. And do you know those sprouts, like those little hairy things? That would be really good, too.
Yeah.
A salt and pepper.
Alfalfa sprouts?
Yeah.
I had today for lunch. There's a Korean sandwich place near where I live. So I had a Pyongyang hot chicken sandwich with gochujang, and that was super dope.
Did it have kimchi on it?
It had some kind of pickled some things, and it had like pickled cucumbers. So I don't think it had kimchi, but it had definitely some of that good vinegar taste.
There's a place down the road from me that does this like Nashville style hot chicken, where it's literally just like a hunk of chicken on a piece of white bread. Oh, it's so good. I'm like thinking about it right now. I'm like getting hungry.
There's a place right down from the road from me that does the same thing. And I go there way too much.
I go there every time I'm in Mattstown. So.
Yeah. So here's a question from @XavierFiles on Twitter. And it's slightly vague, so I will leave it up to you to determine what exactly they mean. But their question is, what are the top three characteristics of the man?
The man has a penis, and he eats hamburgers,
mm-hmm.
and he says, hey.
Yeah, yeah, I think those are all solid characteristics of Manfred the Man. Which is who I suppose that Xavier Files is asking.
I would say lazy, impulsive, and self-indulgent.
Those are way better answers. Can you just cut my answer and put Kelly's instead?
No!
I thought yours were very, like, they were good identifiers. He's also a little bit antisocial, and he's got to learn.
Yeah, he learns his lesson.
I don't know why, but I am feeling very personally attacked right now, Matt.
Look, that's on you, man, that you see yourself in these descriptions.
Okay, so I also didn't know if he was asking about Manfred or just, like, men in general. So that was also just my generalizations of all men.
Also not wrong. Although we should make it clear, not all of them do have penises.
Not all men.
Right, yeah, that's right.
Here's a question from Tom Tificate on Twitter, Tom Spielman. He wants to know how one properly cleans and grooms their pet man.
Well, you could tune in to my 30-minute YouTube video on how to properly groom your man, but it requires a fine tooth comb and some beard oil and a sponge bath. I don't know.
I know you're joking here, but I smell a viral marketing campaign.
some moisturizing lotion, maybe.
Yeah, and how do you like cut his little nails? You gotta get like tiny little nail clippers.
Right, yeah. If you're like one of those people that likes to like trim your man's nails so he doesn't scratch up your furniture, then there's a whole separate YouTube tutorial on that.
I know we've spent so much of this interview talking about like very specific choices in the book, but I have to bring up one more, which is the fact that in the flashback to Steve finding Manfred for the first time, he doesn't have a beard.
No, because he's a younger man.
Well, I had a visceral reaction to it where I was like, he's so young.
He's got a little dirt stash, too.
Yeah.
And he has hair on his head, too. Because it was important for him to look younger but not to look like a baby or a child, because that would have just been weird.
Yeah, he just looks like a scuzzy college student.
Yeah. And he's also not as chubby. He's like a little bit trimmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's let himself go.
He's too comfortable in this life.
He's been coddled. All right, now we are reaching the point in our interview segment that I call Character Corner. This is the part of Twitter questions where people on Twitter who have the names of fictional characters ask questions of our guests.
Mm.
And we're going to start with Real Kunzite on Twitter, who says...
Do you get that reference?
Does?
No, Kelly, she's sort of fine.
Oh, yeah, well, I was thinking about Sailor Moon.
That's him.
Right. It is a Sailor Moon guy.
The Four Kings of Heaven.
Kunzite asks, I'm thinking about getting an animal companion. Should I go with a tiger or a hedgehog?
Hedgehog, obviously.
Might have to agree. They're so cute, the nibble on celery and stuff.
Yeah. I gotta check with Kunzite how fast that hedgehog can run.
Yeah.
Before we can go any further.
Also, according to my research, they just eat like hot dogs. Is that what hedgehogs eat? That seems pretty easy. Tigers, it's like you're gonna have to feed them like whole animals at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. The feeding process for a tiger is gonna be really involved.
It's gonna be very expensive.
Lucky Jim Howlett at Lucky Jim 420.
Blaze it.
Is looking for some romantic advice.
Ew.
He asks, "Hey, Bubs, any chance you know how to get a lady with red hair to dump her boyfriend and get with a real short man?"
Don't.
Yeah, you gotta. If you love her, you gotta let her go. You gotta let her make her own choices.
Yeah, you gotta respect that lady's existing relationships, man.
Yeah, Lucky Jim.
Gotta respect the choices. She's not a prize.
Stop staring at that picture on your bed all day, Lucky Jim. All right, here is one from JJJ Bugle News, J. Jonah Jameson. This is more of a philosophical question, and I apologize for it in advance. Which spider is spookiest, and why is it man?
What?
Okay, so I'm from Australia. I know all about spiders.
Yeah.
The spookiest spider is the huntsman.
Oh, please tell me.
He lives in your house and sometimes in your clothes and also sometimes in your shoes, which is not a place that you want a spider to live.
All right, I'm gonna tell you, there's a spider, a poisonous spider here in the U.S. called a brown recluse that does much the same thing.
I've heard about those ones.
But it has a much less cool name than the huntsman. So I'm going with the huntsman as the cooler spider.
Also, they're really, really big and hairy.
Oh, boy.
But not poisonous.
Oh, those are not poisonous?
No, okay. They're not.
Well, J. Jonah Jameson is just trying to get you to say bad stuff about Spider-Man. He's got
never badmouth Spider-Man.
He's got a real love-hate relationship with Spider-Man. I got to tell you. Here's one last one from a fictional character. This is from Stone Cold HCC, which is an account that exists only to ask questions on War Rocket Ajax. I think this one might be for me and Chris more than it is for you and you, Caitlin and Kelly, so apologies for this one in advance, too.
But, okay, we'll answer it to the best of our abilities.
Well, he wants to know, are y'all the ones who mailed me this potato?
Yes.
It was you!
It was me.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, I have a potato mailing service. He must have signed up for it by accident.
Dollar Potato Club.
Yeah, is that a profitable business?
It is, actually. People want potatoes. Potatoes are a very popular vegetable.
I think they're neat.
If I could be 100% real with you right now, I would absolutely join Dollar Potato Club.
That's good to know.
Would it be a large potato, or can you get a special order of like small russet potatoes?
Yeah, you can get like a handful of small potatoes or one large potato.
We got a rim shot on that. That was great. I don't know where that came from, but I'm so happy to hear that rim
shot. Sorry, you can edit that.
All right. No, I'm leaving it in because it was beautifully timed. That's going to do it for Character Corner and for Twitter questions, which leaves me with just one last question before we wrap up. And it's very important. Caitlin, in your introduction to the book, you talk about other ideas you had before you got to Manfred the Man. Or like, you had this idea of Manfred the Man and you went through other ideas before you finally settled on that's what you wanted to do. One of those titles is Mystery at Penis Valley, a teen detective novel.
I forgot about that.
What do we have to do to make this happen?
There's actually, if you go and scroll through my Tumblr, I actually drew like a cover artwork for Mystery at Penis Valley, and it's really, really delightful. I highly recommend checking it out.
I will find it and I will link it in our show notes. I also must tell you that Chris and I have a mutual friend. Her name is Carla Pacheco, who would love to help you make this happen.
Okay, that might have to be my next endeavor, is writing a teen mystery novel about the mystery at Penis Valley. I can't even remember what conversation that came out of, because it was just like, we were just like making dinner and like, I don't know, just like...
Weren't we like reminiscing about like those Babysitter's Club style books that we used to read when we were kids.
That, like, came after the mystery of Penis Valley. We were talking about something completely, like, unrelated.
Oh, that brought up and Penis then Valley. On,
yeah, and then landed on the mystery of Penis Valley, and then, like, and then I drew the cover. But I honestly can't remember, like, what led to that point.
Maybe that's the mystery of Penis Valley, where it came from. All right. Before we wrap up here, Caitlin Major and Kelly Basto, before we let you go, please tell all our listeners where they can find you online and where they might be able to find Manfred the Man.
Sure. So Manfred is actually available in bookstores and comic book stores now. So you should firstly and foremostly go to your local comic book store and see if they have a copy. Otherwise, you can order it online. If you go to the Quirk Books website, they have some like links for places that you can order it. Yeah, you can find me online at Caitlin D. Major on Twitter and Tumblr and Instagram. I'm around.
And I'm under everything as Moose Kleenex, all one word, on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr.
Our guests have been Caitlin Major and Kelly Basto. The book is called Manfred the Man. It's fantastic, and you should absolutely read it. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
We are through the interview, and that means it's time for our post-interview segment. And this week, I think we're going to be answering a listener question. Matt, what do you got for me?
Chris, this is a follow-up question to the last listener question we asked when we were asked if Flash Gordon was a superhero.
Okay.
This week's question is Super Mario a superhero?
Well, he does wear a cape and flies. Okay, here's the thing. Super Mario is not a superhero. He's an adventure hero. There is a difference. But I think also this is a conflict of medium. Because Super Mario does not exist in a story-based medium where we can make those kinds of distinctions, right?
Yes and no. Because
I shouldn't say a story-based medium. A story-based genre.
In a regular Super Mario game, in like a 2D scrolling Super Mario game. So Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Bros. 2, 3, Super Mario World, the one where he's a baby.
Yoshi's Island.
That's right. He's not a superhero in those. Because he doesn't exist in a world where there are even other people. Except the princess. And Toad, if you count Toad.
I cannot believe you're disrespecting Luigi so much during the year of Luigi, which is every year.
Well, but Mario and Luigi are never on the screen at the same time in any of those games.
There's a character select screen in
Mario 2. Yeah.
In Mario 2.
Super Mario Kart's a different deal. That's a whole different thing. But he's a racer in those games. He's not doing any heroic acts at all. The one game where I would say Mario might qualify as a superhero is Super Mario RPG.
I don't think he can be defined as a superhero because he whatever the qualities of a superhero are, he does not have them.
I would agree with that. Here's why I say Super Mario RPG might open the door to him being a superhero in that one game.
Because there's a dude with laser hands?
I mean, that's part of it. Not only in Super Mario RPG does he have a reputation. Like, people know him, they recognize him, they know that he is a heroic person. They also ask him to do things, and then he does them.
Okay, so it's not just Super Mario RPG that happens. Also Paper Mario.
Yeah, Paper Mario.
And the Mario and Luigi games. So anything that has RPG elements, you're saying you could argue.
Well, there's more story.
Right, they're story-based.
And there's more interacting with other characters instead of mostly spending your time in worlds with just enemies that are monsters.
That's a good point, because I do think there's something about it where only spending time with enemies is an interesting distinction.
And those enemies aren't people. They're
monsters. They're little creatures.
Unless you go to the RPG games, in which case they do actually have personalities. And there are good Goombas like Goombario.
Yeah, and they speak.
Yeah. Whatever the genre conventions are of a superhero, Mario does not exist in those. And I think that is in like I think the limit for me has to be a one of genre conventions.
Yeah, I think by and large that is true. And I think it makes it weird to try to do stories about Mario in media outside of video games.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Mario is defined like as stories. Like, as a protagonist, I've talked about this before, I love Mario. I have so much affection for that dude. I know zero things about him.
But, like, if you go back and watch the old, like, Super Mario Brothers Super Show, they are so strange. Like, the writers of those shows can't even figure out what to do to tell stories. And I'm talking about the cartoon parts, not the parts where Lou Albano and another guy do sitcom shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And even in comics, like we've talked about the Super Mario comic that is enjoyable kind of in spite of itself. You know, it's amazing how they got a decent story out of that comic.
Yeah, the Super Mario Adventures one, which I would say, again, that's not a superhero story, but it is an adventure story.
It's an adventure story and it's a comedy, which is what makes it work.
Yeah, because Mario almost by his very nature needs to be flattened down, and you can't do that with a superhero in the way that you can do it with a comedic hero.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at the games that have more story in the Mario, the RPG element, Mario games, they even have a lot of humor in them because it's kind of the only way you can build a story around Mario and make it work because. Brother, serious Mario stories, they don't work out.
Yeah, not good. Not good. All right, so Mario, not a superhero, but one day maybe we'll actually suss out what makes a superhero and an adventure hero and a pulp hero and all that good stuff. But today is not that day.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and say this is probably the last of the is blank a superhero questions we're going to take.
At least a while.
So please ask different questions on our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. The ask box is open there for you to ask us questions. You can also send us questions by email. Our email address is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever lists and panel president lists. Also, check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. It's also where you can find the Every Story Ever and Panel President list, which now exists as Google Docs. Also, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or the podcasting app of your choice. We haven't gotten any reviews in a while, and if we got some good reviews, it would help us out a lot here 401 episodes into the show.
Yeah, still need them. 401 in, still need them.
Because I'll tell you what, after about 250, we lost all the reviews we had.
That's true.
Because of an iTunes snafu.
Dark times.
Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places that you can find us on the internet. For me, I have made it so easy. All you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net, and you can find links to all my stuff, my other podcasts, my books, my comics, and all my social media presences. They are at mattdwilson.net. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find all my stuff just by going to the-isb.com. I say this every week in hopes that it'll remind me to do it, but I have not added Apocrypals to there yet. So if you want to hear me and Benito Sereno talking about the Bible, then head over to apocrypals.libsyn.com or apocrypals.tumblr.com and check out the episodes and some medieval artwork of Simon Magus exploding. He fought the Justice League.
One of the many things you can learn from Apocrypals.
It's a very educational show. We actually have a good cause this week, Matt.
Okay.
We have asked our listeners to send us good causes that we can talk about. And in addition to telling us about the GoFundMe for Mike DiCarlo's wife that we talked about in the last time we talked about a good cause, Josiah Lockley emailed about... a charity that is near and dear to him. He had a dog named Batman, and unfortunately
Batman the dog passed away back in April from old age, and a couple of his friends donated to the ASPCA in his memory. So that's something that I think we can all get behind. Even though I am not a pet person, I am certainly not into animal cruelty. And I think anyone who's out there doing good work to help people adopt animals and get animals off the streets and help animals that have been abused, like a lot of shelter pets have, are doing good work. So check out the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals if you have not lately, because that is a certainly good cause.
Yeah, and what more appropriate good cause to talk about on the episode where we talked about Manfred the Man? That's going to do it here for episode 401 of War Rocket Ajax. Our next episode will be coming to you from Columbus, Ohio. We'll see how that goes.
I think it's going to be three little letters, Matt.
Are you saying they're going to be HQ and C?
I think they're going to be HQ and C.
That's what this one was.
Always. HQC. Have a great week, everybody.
We love you.
Yeah!